This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, and you're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, August 24th. Political news this week was dominated by comments made by Republican U.S. Senate candidate Todd Akin of Missouri, who said a woman who is legitimately raped doesn't usually get pregnant because he said her body shuts down and doesn't allow it. Many people were outraged, and even though Akin apologized for the remarks, top Republicans asked him to step down, to step aside, to resign from the Senate campaign. Even Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan, who has sponsored anti-abortion legislation with Akin, asked him to step aside. Akin refused. Meanwhile, also this week, the Republican Party's Convention Platform Committee approved a plank calling for a human life amendment, a constitutional ban on abortion without an exception for rape. This issue tops our Week in Review this week, but we will talk about many other state and national political stories as well, and we invite you to call in with the news story that you would like our guest to discuss. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Joining us today for the Week in Review, John Sharpless, who is a professor of history at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also with us is Louis Portis, a former state lawmaker and editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy, and good morning, John.
Good morning to you.
Let's start with Todd Akin and get you both to respond to these comments.
If it's a legitimate rape, the female body has ways to try to shut that whole thing down.
So what was your reaction to that, John Sharpless?
Well, obviously he doesn't know his biology very well. I think there are many things that leave people troubled by the comment. Obviously, the notion that there's some kind of organic response to rape that stops pregnancy, but also distinguishing legitimate rapes from other rapes is very troubling to people. That's a troubling distinction that's going on there in his mind. Brave fellow to hang in there. I was reading some of the articles. The pro-life community in Missouri, while they cautioned that they did not accept the statement itself, wants to stand by him. He's going to press it forward. I'm not so sure it certainly undermines the attempt on Republicans to win a majority in the Senate. I think that, I don't know if that ends that attempt, but it was a seat that they thought they had in moving forward on the majority in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think either party profits from abortion being the national issue here.
Right.
I really don't think that's an issue that the American people feel comfortable with. We did some polling during my campaign, and we found that about 8% of voters on each side of that issue, it's their leading issue. It's the issue that drives their vote. But what happens, of course, is that group on each side are already fully committed one way or another. So my guess is that most pro-life people vote for whom that's their issue, vote Republican already. Most pro-choice people probably vote Democrat already. So to aim rhetoric at them is to waste your rhetoric. They're going to be on your side no matter what, and you're not going to move the other side no matter what you say. And again, most centrist voters find the abortion issue terribly uncomfortable to talk about. I often remember Barbara Bush's wonderful autobiography in which she said she was personally opposed to abortion, but she felt it was tragic that it was politicized because she says it doubles the burden that women make when they make their choice. They're not only making a choice about their future and their bodies, they're making some kind of political statement. I really think Barbara Bush spoke for many Americans.
Well, Louis Portis, in the Senate race in Missouri, though, Todd Akin is still leading in polls and did announce yesterday he made his fundraising goal of, I don't know, $100,000 or something like that ever since he made these these comments, so it didn't really hurt him, apparently.
Well, I think there are people that want to believe him. I mean, think about it. Think about this. I mean, a woman being raped is about as horrendous a crime as can happen. And then they're supposed to carry the rapist child to term and then raise the child. That's terribly, terribly vicious. And so how do you deal with this if you're like Aiken or Ryan, who say that a woman cannot legally have an abortion if she's raped? So what do you have to do? You have to say, well, you know, if you were legitimately raped, to use this term, then she wouldn't get pregnant. So if she did get pregnant, she wasn't raped. So therefore, we don't have a problem here. And it's just this idea of using fake science to, you know, support whatever position you have in mind. It's like the climate change deniers and the like. I mean, people, the right, very conveniently is a kind of anti-science because science contradicts a lot of what they believe. And this is just another example. If we want to force women to have, to bear children against their will, and a woman is raped or there's incest, which, again, I don't think any human being can justify, and any civilized human being can justify that. You have to come up with a different explanation, and that's what they're trying to do. I think John was right in the sense that, you know, people believe one way or the other, and if there are enough people in Missouri that that support him, then I think he has a chance. But realistically, Missouri is a fairly big state. It's going to require a lot of money to win that race, and the national Republicans realize this is like a no-win issue for them, and they're trying to run away from this as quickly as they can, especially before their convention. So they're all pulling back on him. He won't have adequate money.
Yeah,
he can raise some
money,
but they're not going to have the real money.
You wanted to add, John?
Well, I want to make a statement that I think some pro-life people would have to would advocate. They would argue that if they remain consistent, if they are consistent in their love of life, then circumstances like rape and incest, although they're tragic and they're awful and they're horrible, those people would argue that that cannot serve as an exception for the urgency of life. That would be their argument. It's not a contrivance of science. It's a fundamental urgency of life for people who believe that.
John, it's one thing to believe that. It's another thing to try to say that science documents that. That's the difference, John.
Yeah. Let's take a call from Ned in Mosinee. Hello, Ned.
Hi. I know that Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney are trying to distance themselves from Todd Akin's comments, but a bill introduced in July 2010 and reintroduced in January 2011 after the Republicans took the majority in the House stayed otherwise, and co-sponsoring a bill that would limit federal funding for abortions started with the terminology of forcible rape, and it would then limit the funding for any victims of forcible rape. Then an outcry occurred, by the way, and both Todd Akin and Paul Ryan co-sponsored that bill. Then with the outcry from forcible rape, the term forcible was removed, and then it was just rape. Okay, and so I don't think that Paul Ryan can completely forget his past legislative record when it comes to this topic.
Yeah, and Ryan also sponsored or co-sponsored the Human Life Amendment that bans all abortions, which was adopted by the GOP Convention Platform Committee this week. Louis Fortas, your thoughts on Paul Ryan co-sponsoring this legislation with Todd Akin?
Paul Ryan is a very affable fellow, apparently, and he has a nice smile and all that other good stuff. But if you go beyond that and you start looking at his policies. His policies, for example, on a woman's reproductive choices is in the dark ages. And his policies on economics is everything we learned was not true during the Great Depression. Everything he's advocating is what Herbert Hoover was trying to do in the Great Depression. So, I mean, Ryan is wrong on so many issues, but he's so affable and the media is so enamored with him that he gets by with, a smile and changing his mind whenever he wants.
Now, Mitt Romney says that he would allow for exceptions for rape and incest, John Sharpless. So should this platform plank that the GOP is going to adopt be troubling to us?
Well, remember what the Life Amendment to the Constitution says. It recognizes the fetus as having rights. I object to constitutional amendments. I tend to be a bit grumpy about my Constitution. Everybody wants to put their own amendment in there. They want balanced budgets amendment. They want to do away with the 14th and 15th Amendment. They want to do away with the Second Amendment. There's people who want to go back to senators being elected by state legislatures. Leave the Constitution alone. Please, just leave it alone. But I don't think it, in fairness to the pro-life people, they do not actually say in that amendment that all abortions will be illegal.
Right. They don't spell out exemptions,
no.
Though. That's it.
So I think what they are hoping is then with that amendment, the Supreme Court will take a different tact on subsequent decisions involving abortion. That's not going to happen. The numbers aren't there to pass that kind of amendment. I think it's interesting on this issue. There was an actual test of this issue in, I don't remember if it was North or South Dakota, but the legislature passed a very draconian pro-life bill that outlawed abortion both for rape and for incest. And on a subsequent statewide referendum, that was voted down. So,
I think it was South Dakota, John.
It was South Dakota, which showed that even those conservative people of South Dakota said no to that extreme level of pro-life stance.
Yeah. Let's take another caller, Chris in Oshkosh. Hello, Chris.
Good morning. A couple points I want to make. The first one is one of your guests mentioned that the abortion issue is a message which is kind of lost on people who will vote for you anyway. But I'm wondering, it seems like this presidential election is going to come down very much to voter turnout. And if that's the case, maybe it isn't a lost message. My other point is that if you can't get pregnant from being raped, if we pretend for a second that Todd Akin actually believes that, then to outlaw abortion due to rape really doesn't have any impact. It doesn't really mean anything. I don't think the rhetoric of politicians matters as much as the legislation they would support because of the rhetoric. So when people like Paul Ryan attack him and say how ignorant you should drop out of the race, it seems to me what he's really saying is, I fully acknowledge that a woman will get pregnant or can get pregnant by being raped, but I still want to have legislation forcing that woman to bear her rapist's baby. Somehow that seems hypocritical. And worse to me than someone who says, well, I don't really think it could happen anyway. I'm curious.
All right. John Sharpless?
I'm kind of done on this issue.
Yeah.
I've always feel very uncomfortable as a man speaking to this issue. During my campaign, I was always a bit embarrassed. It's the problem with this issue, when men pontificate on it, they will never face it personally. One of the things that's always bothered me about the Akins and the Santorums of the world is that they're willing to tell women things about being a woman that they couldn't possibly know. So,
yeah. Well, let's turn to the politics a little bit more then with John and Baraboo for one last call on this. Hi, John.
Hi. You mentioned that the polls have not changed much in Missouri. Well, last night they're reporting that they have swung 16 points. from McCaskill being 10 down to now 6 up.
Yeah, you're right. I just was updated by my producer that Aiken was up by about 11, and now he is down 8 in another poll. But there are different polls too.
Right.
So.
Right. So.
Yeah.
And that's the main thing I wanted to say. This is a bunch of hooey, but people are going to talk about it anyway. So.
Well, I'm sorry. What do you mean? It's a bunch of hooey.
Well, the woman's right that. To choose is the woman's right to choose. We pick on the women all the time, and we have to remember they're more than half of the population, and if they gang up on us, then we'll really be in trouble. But.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about this race and the politics of this race in terms of the control of the Senate. You had mentioned, well, let's get Louis Fortas in on this. Is this now, you think that this Claire McCaskill might retain this U.S. Senate seat?
I think that if, unless something dramatic happens, like he drops out of the race, which he still can with, I guess he needs the judge's consent or something like that. I think she will win. And she's been a reasonable senator. She did nothing wrong. She's a bright woman. It's just that they've been beating up on her pretty hard. And there is a strong far right in Missouri, and that's how Aiken got through a three-way primary. But the thing is, if the money dries up, the big money dries up, it's going to be very, very difficult for him, because the other side, and I think women will rally on this one very strongly, as they should. And I think that the money will be able to buy commercials that will point out what his position has been on various issues, and I think people will run further away from him as time goes on.
Mm-hmm. And John Sharpless, in terms of whether this is going to make a big difference in the control of the U.S. Senate,
I think he's going to lose now. He may pull it out. He can wrap himself in the. He can claim that he's a victim of the national liberal press, blah, 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 and go on and on about that. And maybe he can rally the forces around him. I think lots of moderates who lean Republican, moderates who lean Democrat, are very uncomfortable about this issue, and they particularly are troubled, even if you're pro-life, as Ava said, even if you're pro-life, the issue of rape and incest leaves people particularly troubled with stringent abortion laws. I think all of this feeds into something else, which may be more important. The National Democratic Strategy, one of the things they're trying to do is claim that the Republican Party is not woman-friendly. And they're trying to strike a number of issues on that. Abortion is just one of them. And I've noticed that the recent list of speakers mm-hmm. at the Democratic Convention will emphasize women speakers. And what they're saying, what they're trying to do is form a coalition. Obama's trying to form a coalition of retired people on the issue of Medicare and women with a scattering of men, and he wins. It's that simple. And Republicans have to figure out a way to deal with that. And obviously the Aiken controversy plays right into Democratic rhetoric about an unfriendly Republican Party.
Well, we'll talk more about these issues, including the speakers at the upcoming GOP convention, that Governor Walker is among them. That's coming up next week. And Tammy Baldwin, who is running for U.S. Senate, was announced to be one of the upcoming speakers at the Democratic National Convention. We'll talk more politics. We'll talk about that race between former Governor Tommy Thompson and Congresswoman Tammy Baldwin for Wisconsin's U.S. Senate race. We'll talk about a new poll that shows the presidential race in Wisconsin tightening up. President Obama still with a slight lead over Mitt Romney, but it's closer since Mitt Romney picked Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan as his running mate. And we'll also talk about other top issues in state and national news as this edition of the Week in Review continues with John Sharpless, professor of history at UW-Madison, and Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up this afternoon after 4, it's Your Views on the News. John Munson in for Ben Marins today. You can call in after 4 to talk about the news story this week that touched you the most. And then tonight on Here and Now on Wisconsin Public Television, Marquette University Law School professor Charles Franklin will discuss his latest poll on Wisconsin's U.S. Senate race, as well as the presidential race. That's coming up tonight on Here and Now. Well, let's talk a little bit about that poll and the issues behind the poll numbers during the Week in Review with Louis Fortas and John Sharpless. And what's your reaction, John Sharpless, as someone who ran against Tammy Baldwin when she was running to be U.S. representative, about her place right now in this race for U.S. Senate? Tommy Thompson leads Tammy Baldwin, according to this Marquette University poll. Is that any big surprise to you?
Not at all. I would be shocked if Tammy finds traction outside of Dane County. Or even out of, I would even include Milwaukee. I think a lot of people will stay home with Baldwin. She's just too Dane County. She's not a moderate Democrat. She's a clear left-wing Democrat. She's part of the Nancy Pelosi bunch. And that doesn't track very well statewide. And, you know, this state knows Tommy Thompson. We know his warts and wrinkles. He's our prodigal son. But overall, I think people have some affection for him. And I think he'd be a tough opponent no matter who the Democrats were running. But I think Baldwin is particularly a hard sell outside of the most liberal parts of the state.
Yeah, in the U.S. Senate race, according to this poll, Thompson led Baldwin 50-41. That's compared to 48-43 2 weeks earlier. Presumably when he hadn't won the primary yet. But what do you make of those numbers, Louis Fortas?
Well, first of all, Tommy was in a very, very difficult primary. And, you know, everything that John has said about he's known around the state and we know all his strengths and his weaknesses and whatever. I mean, the guy almost lost to somebody who had his first entry into electoral politics, Hovde. And so it was a very, very competitive primary. He won. And when you come out of a primary like that, you're going to get the headlines, you know, Thompson wins all over the state. And that's a wonderful bump for a while. The thing that I think people have to take a look at is after the two conventions, if Tommy is still up, you know, 8 points or something like that, then it's going to be a real tough haul for Tammy. If after the conventions it begins to tighten a bit, then I think that it's going to be a very competitive race. And this thing about Tammy being, you know, the most liberal and all of that stuff, she came into the assembly when the same time that I had left, and so we never served together. But I had gotten to know Tammy and watched her in her work in the legislature, and she would be working with Wayne Wood, who was a fundamentalist evangelical Christian who had used to teach Bible lessons in his legislative office, and she and he would team up on legislation. I mean, this woman was capable of working with everyone, and the other thing is everyone likes her. I mean, she's a very, very likable person. I know it's probably difficult for John because he ran against her, but and it's hard to oftentimes like somebody after an election, but Tammy if I would not write Tammy off at all. I think Tammy has a very, very good chance. Tommy has a lot of skeletons in the closet, and as they begin to come out, I think Tammy has a very, very good chance in this race.
Well, Tammy Baldwin once again asked Tommy Thompson to release more of his tax returns. She's released 10 years worth, and Tommy says he's released a couple years, and that's plenty, he says. And there was a column in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel saying that Tommy Thompson made some goofs on his tax returns in the past, and maybe that's why he's wary about releasing any more. Louis, do you think this issue has legs on releasing tax returns?
Only Tommy Thompson in Wisconsin can get by with, "I made some mistakes on my taxes and they caught me, and now I had to pay what I should have paid, and so as a result of that, I'm not going to release any more taxes. He's the only guy that can kind of get by with something like that. I think between he and Romney and others, if you're going to elect someone, you're going to hire someone to represent you, you want to know what their values are, you want to know where their conflicts are, and I think a tax return is a tax return is another indicator of what's going on in your life. Yeah, I think that you have an obligation to do that. And if Tommy is afraid that he's going to have to end up paying what he should be paying in taxes, I'm sorry.
John, should Tommy Thompson release more tax returns?
Well, if getting into office means you have to bear your financial records, absolutely. The mistakes that Thompson had on his earlier returns, and he's gone through this a couple times, were just clumsy, stupid mistakes. They were the kind of mistakes that ordinary Americans make. Now, Lewis may never, ever make a mistake on his taxes. I confess to the people of the state of Wisconsin, I have made mistakes on my taxes, some of which resulted in my getting more money back, and some of which meant that I had to pay them money. Dealing with taxes is difficult, and I think it's particularly difficult for people who are in public office and in the private sector. This campaign will not come down to Thompson's tax records. It will not. And by the way, Tammy Baldwin is a nice person.
You think she's a nice person.
I did during the campaign.
Yes.
I think she's a wonderful person. And if people want to put her in Congress because she's a nice person, that's great. I don't think she's represented the liberal community here particularly well. You look back on her legislation, she time and again fails to stand shoulder to shoulder with her liberal colleagues. She just disappears when Pelosi and Barney and the gang take on the Republicans. She is out of there.
Well, you just said a little while ago she was part of the Pelosi gang.
Yeah, but
and now you're saying she's not part of the Pelosi gang.
John, which way is it? She's part of the gang, but she doesn't show for the fight. I'll give you a perfect example. The last time the Boy Scout issue came up during my campaign, that's when the Supreme Court decided that they could determine their own membership, something I support. Congress decided to have a referendum on the national charter for the Boy Scouts. It was strictly symbolic. I could see people voting to support the Boy Scouts. I could see Tammy as a leader in the gay and lesbian community voting to have the charter revoked. She voted present. She voted present. That is the story of Tammy.
She voted present?
She voted
Might there have been a more complicated... I mean, the thing is, John, you weren't in that caucus to know what was going on. And if you're not in the caucus, you don't know why this was done. And so...
It was symbolic. It was symbolic. It was just a referendum. It was a freebie. And gay and lesbians all over this country looked to her to make a symbolic vote in favor of open access to the Boy Scouts, and she failed them.
Well, let's move on to yet another issue and another poll result
That's a ridiculous thing. I mean, John just got done saying.
Right.
But anyway,
and
I'm sorry,
I understand you both differ on this one. Let's go to the poll that shows President Obama is up 49% to 46% over Mitt Romney in this latest Marquette University poll. It was 50% to 45% a couple of weeks ago, indicating that perhaps the choice of Paul Ryan as Mitt Romney's running mate has helped Mitt Romney some in Wisconsin. Do you doubt that at all, John Sharpless?
I think Obama's going to take this state. It's going to be close, but he did well. In the final analysis, he won this state before. Here's the problem that the Republicans face in states like Wisconsin. We all know, and I'm one of them, Republicans are very critical of Obamacare. Everybody knows that. The problem is that we as a party don't have a substitute for it. So Republicans really don't have a positive agenda on the health issue. And for small-town people and farming people, people in the factories, people who have been laid off, health care is a real issue, and they might be conservative on all other issues. They might be hunters, they're Second Amendment types, they may even be pro-life, but the health care issue is paramount. And until Republicans have a positive proposal to substitute for Obamacare, the incumbent president is going to win. That's the final. I'm waiting at the national convention to see if the Republicans have a proposal. The American people would be perfectly happy to vote for an alternative. They just haven't seen it.
Do you agree or disagree that Obama's going to win and Obama's going to take Wisconsin, Lewis?
Yeah, I think Obama will take Wisconsin. I think he will win. I also, if you look at the polling, there's a number of different polls out there. And if you look at what happened in the primaries, the last cycle and all, the Marquette University poll has been quite accurate. I was rather surprised because of some other stuff in the past, but I thought they were very, very accurate. This change of going from 50 to 49 is certainly within the margin of error by a huge amount. But also, these are rounded off numbers, and I don't have the basic data. But you could have been talking about at one point it was 49.6%, so you rounded that up to 50, and now it may have dropped to 49.4%, you round that down to 49. It could be that small a difference. So you don't really know what's going on there. But I do think that the 49 of the 50 is basically about the same.
Right. Okay. Let's move on to the GOP convention kicking off on Monday, assuming Hurricane Isaac doesn't crash the party. Republicans are saying it's game on. Governor Walker is scheduled to speak on Tuesday night. Vice presidential candidate Paul Ryan will address the crowd on Wednesday. John Sharpless, expecting anything from either of these two during the convention? Any significance you think that Governor Walker was chosen as one of the speakers?
I think there was a time in our history, particularly in the 50s and 60s, when the national conventions were a national event. Everybody watched them. It didn't rival the Super Bowl, but everybody was interested in them. I think that has ebbed. I think conventions are largely for the true believers now. And so I wouldn't be surprised if the speeches that Walker and Ryan give, and the other people, I noticed that they nested Ryan in between or maybe on the same venue as other vice presidential hopefuls. They're really speaking to the true believers on that side. I can't imagine Democrats tuning in for that. If there's a Democrat tuning in for that speech, they haven't got a life. There's lots of other things. I mean, and it's true on the other side. You might tune in for the final speech, where the big honcho tells us how he's going to change America. But the other speeches are really for the party followers, and they tend to affirm basic party values. I'll tell you, if I may complain a bit about these national conventions, people in that little checkoff on their taxes, millions of dollars of public funding go to these silly events. I think the corporate sponsors of the convention ought to come out of the closet and boldly have banners out there that say it's the AT&T Republican Convention. It's the AFL-CIO Democratic Convention. They ought to just sell them some space, and we could all see boldly the big PACs are really behind this. This is a chance for all the party types to get together and have a drink and talk about how bad the other side is.
Have a drink.
It's nonsense.
All right. Do you agree with that, Lewis?
There's nothing left to say.
The Democratic Convention is the week after next, and Wisconsin U.S. Representative Tammy Baldwin, the Democratic candidate for Wisconsin's U.S. Senate seat, will be one of the featured speakers. And, Lewis, why do you think she was chosen?
Well, I think that Wisconsin's an important state, and for a lot of reasons. And we had the recall election, which definitely put Wisconsin on the map. And I think we, you know, anyone who left the state or in the last year, everywhere you would go, people would say, oh, you're from Wisconsin. Tell me about it. And, I mean, it was really, we were on the front page of the world in some sense. It's kind of considered a swing state. It's becoming less of a swing state, I think, in terms of the presidentials. But I think it makes sense that Tammy would be invited. And again, she's a good speaker. She's a very bright woman. She's a wonderful representative, I think, of the Democratic Party. So I think there's no surprise there. And I think Walker became kind of a rock star for the right, and Romney is definitely trying to court the right, so I think it makes a ton of sense to have Walker speaking, and then Ryan's the VP, so you have to have him speaking. So, no, I think it all makes sense.
We will continue reviewing the news of the week as we continue, also coming up, our Week in Review quiz. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Louis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee. Louis Fortas, also a former Democratic state lawmaker, and John Sharpless, who is a professor of history at UW-Madison. John Sharpless, a former Republican candidate for Congress, providing us some analysis and commentary on the issues that are making news this week. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Time now for the Week in Review quiz. Wisconsin has some bragging rights this week after news came out of a very productive month of June. What did the Badger State lead the nation in producing at a whopping 227 million pounds? So what did Wisconsin lead the nation in producing at a whopping 227 million pounds? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can call in your guess, and we will randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers, and the winner will be entitled to one of the many books that we have featured on the program in recent days. If you're a Packer fan, maybe you will want to pick 101 Reasons to Love the Packers by David Green. We talked with David Green just this morning between 6 and 7 o'clock. All right, so good luck on that. We'll announce the winner and the answer at the end of the program. Let's continue talking with John Sharpless and Louis Fortas about the news of the week. And let's take a caller who's been waiting on one of the issues on the campaign trail. Chris in Sussex is with us. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Joy. Thanks for taking the call. Romney just come out with a new plan, new platform for the oil drilling. He's going to open that all up, and I think it's going to create hundreds of thousands of jobs, where Obama, he cut off all the drilling in the Gulf, and it's lost hundreds of thousands of jobs.
All right. Well, let's get Louis to start on this one. So what do you think of Mitt Romney's energy plan, and is it a lot better than President Obama's?
Well, I mean, Romney's plan is the plan of 30 years ago. I mean, fossil fuels are something that we have to be getting away from, and we have to be moving in a different direction. All the climate change deniers, I think, after this summer are having a harder time believing what they've been running around telling people. So, I mean, climate change is a serious issue. Fossil fuels are a big contributor. We have to be moving in a different direction. The gentleman who called is correct that if you do any kind of, you pump money into anything, you're going to create jobs. But you get much more of a bang for the buck in terms of jobs if you go into alternative energies, if you go into renewable energies, if you do more solar, more wind, you know, building those turbines, building the solar collectors, all of that creates millions of jobs also. But it's more, you get more jobs per dollar when you do alternative energy. You're also looking toward the future. You're working against the worsening climate change. So I think Romney is wrong on all counts on this one.
Mm-hmm. John Sharpless.
Well, I think Chris is right here.
I would assume.
I will.
All right, Lewis, let him talk.
I don't. I haven't seen the data on jobs generated by fossil fuel extraction versus building windmills. I really haven't. Perhaps Lewis has seen it, and there really is a test of that. I'm not sure that this is a job issue. I think clearly over the long run, whether or not you believe in the utilization of fossil fuels, they are being diminished, and there will be a day when we have to have other ways to produce energy in America. For the foreseeable future, the alternatives to fossil fuels simply will not do the job. I recently read an article that said in order to provide enough power for Los Angeles, you would need a solar grid that would cover the entire southwest of the United States. And wind turbines are fine as a supplement to power, but they can't possibly provide sufficient power for what we need at the peak of summer or at the peak of winter. And so for the foreseeable future, we have to figure out a way to efficiently use fossil fuels to produce less pollution. And I think, if I may say something on this pollution thing, I think the more serious pollution is localized pollution. It produces asthma. It produces a host of problems locally. You can phrase it in terms of global warming. Clearly, the world is in a warming cycle, whether human beings are causing it. I'll let Lewis speak to that.
Well, let me, I know you're both very smart and have a lot to say on all these issues, but because we're so short on time and the Week in Review is such that we cover so many issues, let me move to one other very important issue that I wanted you both to at least give us some sort of prediction on. This week, the CBO released a new forecast. It's massive U.S. government spending cuts and tax hikes due next year will cause even worse economic damage than previously thought if Washington fails to come up with a solution, according to the Congressional Budget Office. Without action by Congress to avoid a fiscal cliff, Americans should expect a significant recession and the loss of some 2 million jobs, according to the CBO's director in his gloomiest assessment yet. Well, that scares the heck out of me, Lewis Fortas. What about you?
Well, first of all, I want to apologize to John for that, my little interruption to him.
It's okay.
It was inappropriate, John. Sorry.
No problem at all.
In terms of the CBO, what they're trying to do is basically, I think, point out that unless Congress can begin to work together and actually begin to deal with the situation that they set up for themselves, they said if we don't deal with this, there's going to be this sequestering, and that we're going to all these terrible things are going to happen. And what the CBO was basically scoring was what would happen if in the worst case scenario. And in the worst case scenario, yeah, it's pretty bad. Yeah. But it's not going to happen.
Well, that's what I wanted to hear. Do you think it's going to happen, John Sharpless?
Well, the background is that Congress, in order to pass the budget, or at least a temporary budget, about 2 years ago, posed a whole bunch of draconian, horrible scenarios, and they built them into the future. And that was supposed to force these guys into action. But, of course, it didn't force them to do anything. This whole thing is just absurd. No wonder Congress is at their lowest popularity in the history of the United States. So they posed this crisis. They invented this crisis to make themselves act. And now they don't know what to do about it. I think the budget office is absolutely right. If this thing falls due, it's going to be catastrophic. But I agree with Lewis. I don't think it really will. I think Congress at the last minute will figure out some kind of short-term bit of nonsense. We're going to go on this thing. I don't see a final resolution to deficits.
Also this week, Wisconsin Attorney General J.B. Van Hollen is asking the state Supreme Court to bypass lower courts and consider his appeal on voter ID. He wants voter ID resolved before the November 6th presidential election, wants voters to need to show their photo IDs for that election. John Sharpless, your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's appropriate for Van Hollen to do this. Given the lack of functionality of our Supreme Court, I don't know how going to our Supreme Court is going to the mountain. I don't know. I wouldn't be. I just can't imagine the Supreme Court, given its difficulties, wants to confront this issue right now. So I wouldn't be surprised if they don't reject him.
What do you think, Lewis?
Well, I think they rejected him once, and now he's coming back. And it's interesting. He's the co-chair of Tommy Thompson's Senate campaign committee. And, you know, you didn't hear much from him until Tommy won the primary, and all of a sudden he's coming back to the Supreme Court saying, hey, we need help. Because this, again, this voter ID is really voter suppression, and it's designed to hurt the groups that have a tendency to vote more Democratic. So it really is a very political thing, and I think Van Hollen's a very political guy. And so, surprise, surprise.
You know, speaking of voting, there's a story that just came out in the last couple of days about the wife of Republican State Representative Robin Voss. Apparently, Samantha Voss voted in Wisconsin's April primary and the June recall election as a resident of Idaho. And some Democrats are making hay that, hey, yeah, there was some voter fraud going on. Lewis Fortas, you know anything about this?
No, I don't.
How about you, John Sharpless?
We have had a problem with people sneaking in from Idaho for decades. Every time we hold an election, they come sneaking across the border. I don't know what it is about people from Idaho wanting to mess with our elections, and I'm opposed to it. We have to figure out these Idaho, what do they call themselves, Idahoans?
Probably.
all I know is there's a big group in Idaho that doesn't believe in the federal government, you know, that the federal government even exists. You know, there's those crows, the black helicopter crowd. So I don't know. I didn't think they wanted to vote at all.
Lewis, there are black helicopters.
Let me quickly.
I'm sure there is one or two.
Let me quickly mention that the winner of our Week in Review quiz was Carl in Chippewa Falls. Congratulations, Carl. He answered correctly that Wisconsin produced a whopping 227 million pounds of cheese, making us, again, Wisconsin's Dairyland, America's Dairyland, I mean. That quarter of a billion pounds was one-fourth of the nation's cheese production and a 2% increase over June of last year. About half of Wisconsin's cheese was Italian. It also led the nation in cheddar production. We have about a minute to go. Lewis, do you have a favorite kind of cheese or how you like to eat it?
Well, if you have a Wisconsin cheese, I would probably have to vote for the Swiss.
The Swiss cheese, one of my favorites. And John Sharpless?
Well, I mentioned before the show that I really like brie, but there's something kind of unmasculine about that. You know, and I have to worry, you know, being a Republican, I have to worry about my masculinity. So I'm going sharp cheddar today.
Yeah, you know, there we go. That's a favorite. Well, there we go. So congratulations again, Carl in Chippewa Falls, for guessing the Week in Review quiz correctly. Thanks to John Sharpless and Lewis Fortas for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joy.
Lewis Fortas, editor-in-chief of the Shepherd Express in Milwaukee. John Sharpless, professor of history at UW-Madison. By the way, coming up Monday on our State Capitol Report, we'll preview the GOP convention and the Wisconsin role in the GOP convention, but we will also talk with Democratic State Senator Tim Cullen, who, along with Republican State Senator Dale Schultz, wants some serious reform to redistricting in Wisconsin, and we'll talk about that on our State Capitol Report on Monday. Have a great weekend. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Ideas Network.